Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into Unique, Life Starring You. This show airs every Monday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/younique.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now is your host of here is your host of Unique, Ms. Susan Stackpole.
Thank you so much, Corey, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in here on YO Unique, Life Starring You. And we are what we are because of you, so thank you so much for joining us. At those of you who may be with us for a while, and those of you joining us for the first time, welcome, and thank you for being here. We have a special project here at Unique called Pray It Forward. There's a lot of disconcerting things in the media, and there are studies that show prayer, meditation, loving, positive thoughts all make a difference. And so we ask that when you see those things, and especially for anyone in your life that may be going through a hard time, we do believe that prayer and meditation and loving thoughts make a difference. And so we ask that you just send some love and positive energy their way. And we certainly do appreciate it. We have an extra special guest joining us this evening, and I will share with you a little bit about him, and then we'll bring him on the show. His name is Charles Poliquin. And while you may not may be wondering who is that, you may have seen some of his work in the Olympic athletes. Charles is recognized as one of the most successful strength coaches in the world. He's a native of Ottawa, Canada, and completed graduate studies in exercise physiology, and he began coaching elite athletes at a young age. He's fluent in English, French, German, and researched European journals for years, in addition to speaking with other coaches and scientists in his quest to optimize training methods. Charles is known worldwide for producing faster athletes and gold medalists and has been coaching athletes at Olympics since 1984. His athletes have achieved hundreds of medals, wins, and personal bests, including Olympic medalists in 17 sports and world record holders in 10 sports. Charles has perfected the art of producing top results by combining nutrition and training routines, and the culmination of his knowledge is shared in his international publications. He has published 13 books, including the popular German Body Comp program, which provides a complete diet and fitness program that anyone can use to achieve optimal body composition. Charles developed the PCP coaching certification that includes 5 levels and has reached students in now 68 countries. The PICP certification provides personal training and strength coaches with the tools to help the novice client who has never exercised and the elite athlete preparing for the Olympics. Charles' interest in achieving the best nutrition for a healthy lifestyle and optimum performance led him to develop the BioSignature Modulation Program, which he uses as a body composition assessment to guide dietary protocols. He transformed this program into the BioSignature certification and shares his knowledge and practices with the rest of the world. Charles continues to innovate and redefine the world of fitness, nutrition, and health. Please visit Charles' website at www.charles.poliquin.com for more information. And here with us this evening, thank you so much, Charles, for joining us.
Welcome, Susan.
My goodness, you have been busy, busy, busy.
Yeah, for the last 3-2 years, I guess.
So. Oh, my goodness, wow. Doing all sorts of great things in the world of health and fitness and training, and my goodness. Charles, tell us a little bit, have you always been interested in health and fitness and nutrition?
From my childhood.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And so how did that metamorphosis, how did you get into training athletes? Charles, tell us a little bit about how that happened, please.
Well, I first started out when I was 17 years old. I was training at university, and there was a classmate of mine who was on the national volleyball team. And he said, well, you're pretty strong. Can you write me a program? And so I wrote him a program, and he became the strongest guy on the national volleyball team. And he brought me one of his colleagues a few months later, which I trained, and that guy became second on the team, and I trained a third guy, who came in third, and then the Japanese coach we had at the time said, well, maybe you should bring that guy in full-time to help out the volleyball team, and I did, and that's what started it, and then producing medical medicine, cycling and swimming and figure skating. So as the years went by, my name spread before the internet ever existed, and it allowed me to train more and more athletes. So, you know, it's a good sign when you deal with your repetition without the internet. You know, nowadays, people make up repetitions on the internet, and when you really check their background, it's actually quite poor.
Right, right, absolutely. You've got to be really selective with knowing, especially when you're doing anything, I think, with your body, of knowing exactly who you're working with and what they have to offer you. And it's just amazing because you've really been a leader in the field, Charles, and you bring a lot of information to light that I think that surprises people. We were speaking a little bit before the show, and you shared something with me that I found very surprising in terms of... And would love to have you share with our listening audience about what is the one thing that you feel is actually sort of goes against people's training and doesn't really help them as much as people think that it does in terms of certain types of activities.
Well, that's going to be a big shocker for most people in the audience, but I think that aerobic work is a complete waste of time and is actually harmful to the body. And one of the main reasons why people do not lose fat is because they do slow, long-distance cardio. And there's many physiological reasons behind that, but actually aerobic work ages your brain. We actually know from studies with Olympic athletes that the more volume they've done throughout their Olympic career, the faster their brain ages, and they're more likely they're going to have Alzheimer's disease. So, for example, cross-country skiers tend to do the highest volume of all Olympic athletes when we're concerned about aerobic work, and they do have the brains that age the fastest. Second after them is the rowers. And now we have even looked in research at looking at the presence of the stress hormone cortisol in their aerobic endurance hair level, and then what we found is that the more volume they've done in their life, the more cortisol accumulates in their hair. And cortisol is a stress hormone, and that links to oxidative stress. So, for example, your brain ages prematurely, so the more aerobic work, the more likely you will forget where your keys are. So it affects short-term memory, it affects long-term memory.
Wow.
But it's not good for you. You know?
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, sometimes there's people that, let's say, that have health issues where their doctor recommends that it's important for them to get cardiovascular exercise. What do you recommend for people like that that are put on some sort of exercise regimen by their doctors to make sure that they get regular, say, cardiovascular exercise 3 times a week? What would you recommend for them, Charles?
Change doctors. Number one is that doctors are not actually trained in exercise physiology, but there are some medical doctors out there that have finally recognized that aerobic work is counterproductive. But Dr. Schwarzbein out of Santa Barbara, she's probably the leading world endocrinologist that studies diabetes and insulin resistance. And in her book, she's severely against aerobic exercise, and she's utterly convinced, I mean, she has a lot of data to back it up, that it actually precipitates adrenal fatigue. So it actually makes you more stressed. Dr. Houston, who's the director of the Hypertension Institute in Nashville, demonstrated in his latest book, which is called What Your Doctor Doesn't Know About Heart Disease, that aerobic work has been overestimated as a risk-reducing means in heart disease. He actually has an entire chapter on why strength training is more likely to prevent heart disease than cardiovascular work. And an interesting thing is that people who exercise aerobically on electronic machines like treadmills and bikes actually aged their pancreas 46 times faster than control people. So, you know, Dr. McDavis from Guelph, Ontario, has been doing loads of research on that topic, and aerobic work on electronic equipment precipitates aging. It accelerates it, but it actually attacks more the pancreas than anything else. So besides damaging your brain, you're damaging your pancreas, and the pancreas, you know, is what regulates insulin. So the more aerobic work you do on electronic equipment, the faster it leads to diabetes. So
You know, X-Train, as you know, as you've been saying in introduction, hundreds of Olympic athletes, I get them leaning for competition, but I refuse to do aerobic work. I do interval training, and I do strength training, and I work with their dads. But aerobic work, in my opinion, is one of the ways not to make progress.
Wow. So how does that work then, Charles, when you have athletes who, where a large part of, let's say, the competition that they're doing does actually involve some element of aerobic activity? And maybe I should back up first. Charles, explain to us, in case there's some listeners who are wondering, what exactly is considered aerobic activity, so that everyone who's listening is clear about that?
Well, most people consider aerobic activity that is at such a low intensity that you can actually carry a conversation while doing it. Okay, so for example, people on a bike, they'll bike, they can talk to their exercise mates.
Right.
That type of work is the one that they despise. In aerobic work, what they'll say, people, you know, a lot of people keep propagating this myth. They say, well, the intensity can't be high enough. It cuts down on your speeching patterns, and you should do long, low-distance aerobic. So the initial acronym was LSD, long, slow distance. That's the type that is worse for you. I mean, it brings in increases in inflammation in the body, and the more inflammation you have, the more belly fat you store, and the more belly fat you store, the more inflammation you get. We know from research that belly fat contains 5 pro-inflammatory cytokines, and those increase inflammation in the body. So besides aging your brain, it ages your joints and pretty much everything else in the body. So aerobic work, again, is very counterproductive for health purposes. And, you know, also, if you exercise like in a major urban city, you got to realize that you increase the exchange of oxygen in your body, but the exchange of also polluted air. I mean, as early as 1982, Ottawa, which is when was at the time the least polluted capital in the Western world, we tested people's oxidative stress levels after only 20 minutes of long, slow distance along the what they call the Rideau Canal, which is a least polluted area of Ottawa. And we were shocked to realize that the oxidative stress of a 20-minute aerobic run was the same as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day.
Wow.
So,
that's,
I mean,
crazy.
Yeah, so oxidative stress, you know, is not good for you. I mean, who would want to damage your lungs that much? So it is a major issue, you know, and it can go on and on what it does, but there's also a lot of research that it actually decreases your ability to produce power, you know. And then it is terrible. It destroys your ability to have explosive contractions, you know, and it compromises the immune system. The more volume you do of aerobic work, the weaker your immune system is. Okay.
Oh my goodness! I would imagine that a lot of people are very surprised by that. And for anyone tuning in, we're here with Charles Poliquin at www.charlespoliquin.com. Check out his website. He's got a lot of great articles and information that pertain to what we're speaking about this evening, too. Charles, I would imagine that many people are very, very surprised, and that there's a lot of controversy about what you're sharing with us about the aerobic activity, because I just think about all those videos from the 80s where everyone was getting on the aerobic exercise bandwagon.
Yeah, but not a lot of people are senile and diabetic, so what?
Information that would have been nice to have, ahead of time. So what suggestion would you have for people who are listening tonight, Charles, that would like to get up tomorrow morning and they're thinking, oh my gosh, I've been doing aerobic exercise all this time. What are some things they can do tomorrow to change their exercise routine to be more healthy and effective for them?
Well, another thing I didn't add is actually aerobic work is a castration agent for males. The more aerobic work you do, the less testosterone you have, and actually it's been shown to shrink the sexual organs. So, you know, it's castration by volume. So the best form of exercise are interval training. So you'd say you warm up, you run very fast for, let's say, 60 seconds, and then for 3 minutes, you just walk. You don't go at a slow pace. So interval training. So I'm not against exercising, but I don't like the slow, long-distance type of stuff. I like quick bursts and then rest, quick bursts and rest. So, for example, you could go for a run, you warm up for 5 minutes, and let's say you go one telephone pole to another as fast as you can go. You go at full throttle. And then you really reduce your speed where you just walk. And then you walk for three telephone poles. And then you burst again, for one telephone pole to the other. That's a simple way to do interval training. Obviously, you could use one more sophisticated type of watch, but that's a very simple way to do it. The second thing they should do is strength training. Now, Tufts University, showed that when you look at aging and factors that regulate aging, the single most best predictor of how long you're going to live is actually levels of muscle mass. It's not blood pressure, it's not cholesterol, it's not homocysteine, it's muscle mass. And the surprising second most important factor that will determine how long you're going to live is actually muscle strength. So the top two anti-aging predictors are muscle mass and strength. So, and that's what you get from strength training. Also, you got to realize that the more muscle mass you put on, the more calories you burn at rest. So that's a good advantage. Number two is that research is very clear that when you do strength training, you actually improve insulin sensitivity. So your body can effectively use insulin much better. And it's well accepted non-functional medicine that the hormone of aging is actually insulin. So the more insulin you produce in your life, the faster you're going to age. So that's why, Americans using all these high fructose corn syrup drinks and whatever else are aging much faster than European counterparts. So, we have to either do interval training or strength training to increase our fat burning, but also extend our lives.
Wow. Charles, it's interesting when you were talking about the interval training. It reminds me of when you watch kids, especially young kids that go out to play. That's actually when you watch children play, that's sort of how they play. It's like they go crazy for a minute and then they sort of chill out, and then they go crazy for a minute and they sort of chill out. And so it's interesting that if you look at them, like, that seems like it's more of our natural state of being when you look at kids before they're sort of socialized into the way that they're, supposed to behave and that sort of thing. Would you say that there's some truth to what you're talking about the interval, that it's more natural to what our bodies are meant to be doing?
Okay. You're 100% right, but just think about it as far as evolution. In the last 40,000 years, our genes have only evolved 0.2%. So basically, modern man is a caveman with a cell phone. Okay, so if you look at it that way, as animals, we don't feed ourselves aerobically. No one goes for a run and tries to pick raspberries at the same time. You're going to drop your raspberries, it's not going to be very effective. So as animals, we had two choices to feed ourselves. We chase a deer, throw a spear at it, and then have that for dinner. And if we were not very lucky hunters that day, we walked, not ran. We walked around and foraged fruits and berries and nuts and seeds and so on. So the human as an animal, when they achieved itself, it either has to chase, we're basically designed to either throw a rock at a rabbit or chase it. But, we can't outchase the rabbit aerobically. So we throw a rock and snap his head, or we throw a spear, or, we do a quick spin and club it. But otherwise, we're never going to win against a rabbit when we look at long distance. And then that's how we evolved. We performed very short anaerobic tasks. Or we went to the extreme and just walked to feed ourselves.
Interesting. Very, very fascinating, Charles. I appreciate you sharing all this information with us, because it certainly is educating me, and I imagine it's educating our listeners as well. One of the other things that you talk about, Charles, and would love to have you share more, there's so much controversy out there about supplements, multivitamin supplements and specific element supplements and that sort of thing. Would love to get your input on the importance and significance of supplements and how to figure out what to take and how much to take and all that sort of thing.
Well, you know, supplements either gets a bad rap or gets exaggerated claim, but you got to look at research and what it tells you. Let's start with the basics. The average American every day will detoxify over 500 chemicals, okay?
Wow.
And that's one of the main reasons why we're fat. So, for example, you know, if you step in your car and you have that new car smell to promote the sale, well, that's quite a nasty toxin. Or if you take a moisturizer, you look at most moisturizers on the market, you will find, for example, there's one that shall remain nameless, but there are five types of parabens in it. Parabens are linked to breast cancer, but they're also anti-testosterone agents and or what we call it, the forms of xenoestrogens, so foreign estrogens. So they compete with your actual good estrogens in your body and can induce cancer. So all these chemicals are not doing so well for you. So there's very good research, for example, if you look at breast cancer. As I'm speaking tonight, we've identified in the scientific literature six specific breast cancer genes, okay?
Okay.
So you could be born with 5, 6, 1, or nil. But what research has showed is that if women take a multi that's well-designed, which has five times the recommended allowance, their risk of breast cancer is actually lower, even if you got all six forms of breast cancer genes, than a woman who has no breast cancer genes but does not take a multi. And,
wow.
And one of the things that we know is that at the end of the genes, you have a cap called a telomeric end. And there's a very good test out of Texas that will look at what we call telomeric end and the length of your telomeres. And that will predict how long you're going to live within 5 years. It's a very good test genetically. Well, when you are exposed to a lot of toxins, those telomeric ends take a beating and get change their shape. But what they found is that five times the RDA will actually repair those telomeric ends. So it is a good thing. And for example, let's say you have a chemical XYZ in your blood. Your body does this daily. It's called biotransformation. You could actually Wikipedia it to, you don't believe me, but there's a lot of research on that. So okay. You let's have a chemical, let's call it XYZ, and then it goes to the liver, and the liver takes a nutrient, usually it's a vitamin or a mineral or an antioxidant, and that's what we call phase one detoxification. So it attaches the bad chemical to a nutrient, and that becomes a T1 conjugate, okay? And bear with me here. Then it goes to another part of the liver, where in 90% of cases, it is attached to a amino acid. So something that comes from protein. Then you attach that protein structure, and that becomes a T2 conjugate. And then it's excreted in the feces, the sweat, or the urine. And we do that, you know, for 500 chemicals a day. So when you don't have a good nutrition, you actually run out of T1 and T2 conjugates. So the problem nowadays is that we actually need a more nutritious diet than our ancestors. I mean, our genes are not designed to have moisturizers or phthalates, and they're not designed to, for example, have dashboards in the cars that releases benzenes and so on. So the toxic load on the human body is enormous. And there's two very good studies, one done in the U.S. and one done in Holland, that showed that every single child in those countries, regardless if they come from a pristine area or not, have rocket fuel, fire retardants, styrenes, PCBs that have been banned since the 70s, and they all find that in umbilical cord.
So our babies are born toxic.
Wow.
And again, you could find this very easily on, if you go to any medical database on the internet, like one of the best ones is www.pubmed.org. It's free, and they will give you all the scientific papers. You know, I don't like voodoo information. I like research-based knowledge. Mm-hmm. And then, and you can get that for free. You know, it's sponsored by the NIH, and you can read that up. But styrene, which is found from the styrofoam cups, also is found in human body fat, but in the baby's umbilical cord. So, you know, the mothers, and they even found that those toxin levels were found in Guam and Alaska, meaning that the wind carries those toxins.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, all things that I think on a daily basis we probably just wouldn't even consider. So thank you so much for sharing that with us, Charles. For anyone just tuning in, we're here with Charles Poliquin, www.charlespoliquin.com. He's got a lot of great articles and resources and tips and strategies on his website. Charles, it seems like there's so much to just sort of consider in keeping our bodies healthy and being aware of what we're putting into them. And it's interesting what you were saying about just all the different chemicals and that sort of thing. There was a gentleman who did a movie called Bag It, the movie. And he did where they do the test on your bodies about the different chemicals. And he and his wife were expecting a baby. And so he wanted to see just how much sort of junk goes into the body just beyond nutrition in terms of the food that you're eating. Also with like the creams and the lotions and the different things that come from like the toxins from plastics and that sort of thing. And so medically, he had them test him before. And then for like a week or something like that, he ate all these different foods and used all these different products. And the level of chemicals that were in his body, I think, was up 40% in 1 week just by using certain. And these are all things you can find at the supermarket and on the market and that sort of thing. What sort of things can we do, Charles, to sort of combat that in our daily lives? Because it seems like it's all around us. So what can we do to make sure that we're making healthy choices for ourselves?
Well, there's a very good website that actually my company donates to. My company donates 10% of our revenue pre-taxes to all sorts of charities, you know, that we usually go for people who try to help out humankind. And one of the websites I really like is www.ewg.org. And this website will test the level of chemicals in all cosmetics, lotions, laundry detergents, and so on. And for example, they just produced a massive report on how sunscreens are bad for you, you know. And then, you know, people, when they read the article, they're blown away about the stuff they're putting in their skin on a regular basis, which is extremely toxic for you. So you can reduce your toxic load by going to the website and picking the right products. And there is no commercial bias. They're not paid by anybody. The tests are very fair. They're very scientific. So I completely endorse that website. And the second thing you have to do is pretend, or get into a mind frame, what would a caveman eat? You know, there's no such thing as a donut or a big old tree, right? So when I ask people to make choices, I say, just ask yourself, did the caveman have access to that food? Okay? And then if he didn't, then don't eat it. So it's very simple to make the right food choices. But if you look at the example like meat, okay? In the media, there's a lot of alarmism, and then sometimes a good study comes out or bad studies, and they get criticized. There's actually a very good study by Harvard that says that red meat is bad for you, and I'm a big proponent of meat. But I would agree with the Harvard study, but the thing that they didn't make clear enough to the general public is what is the quality of meat we're eating, okay? The meat we nowadays has had drugs, antibiotics, pesticides. It's fed grains. They're not designed to have grains. It's not fed grass. So I'm all pro-red meat as long as it's wild, like buffalo or elk, or if it's grass-fed and not grass-finished. You really have to insist on eating the right stuff. And I'll give you another website. Again, I make no money. It's just a good website. It's eatwild.com. And then you could just punch in your zip code, and you'll find where it's closest to you, where you could have cage-free eggs and raw milk and grass-fed beef or lamb or whatever else, you know. And then, if you start to eat uncontaminated food, you will lower your toxic load. So this is stuff you put outside your body, like the shampoos and the moisturizers, you know, that you should eliminate or find a better one. And then there's the stuff you put inside your body, which are your food selection. I mean, for example, trans fats. Trans fats are found in a lot of food. And the problem with U.S. label laws are too lax. So they compare those to Canada. So people consume trans fats every day. But the National Academy of Sciences, the medical branch, said that the only safe level of trans fats for humans is zero. Trans fats are linked to heart disease. Trans fats are linked to cancer. Now, if you are the type of person that eats fried chicken from, you know, and they use a lot of trans fats for that, then, you know, you're actually affecting your health. And then there's research that was done by Dr. Johnson at the University of Calgary, and he showed that if you measure trans fat consumption in the U.S. just by figuring out the per capita amount of chicken fried restaurant, fried chicken thing, IQ is at its lowest. So basically, the more fried chicken you eat, the dumber you get. Okay? So the more trans fats you consume, so if you eat a lot of French fries and all these fried foods, you're basically sabotaging your IQ, you know, and then one of my pet peeves is the quality of breakfast, you know. And then Harvard University asked for some excellent research on the design of a breakfast in terms of carbohydrate, fat, and protein ratios, and how they affect the mind. And, for example, a breakfast of pancakes you give your child can lower his IQ by 20 points. So if your kid goes to school eating Pop-Tarts or some crap like that, you're basically training them to be dumber. You know? So good nutrition is actually brain doping in the sense that it's like you're giving your child an advantage over his classmates.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing, Charles. I think that a lot of people just don't even think that. They just look at the label and they say, oh, well, it's got some vitamin A and it's got some vitamin C, and so that looks good, and it's good to go. That's amazing. That's just amazing how it all works together. Charles, how important in terms of training? We've talked about the foods that you put into your body and the kinds of lotions and conditioners and the external effects. What about with the athletes that you work with? How important is mental conditioning in terms of having a positive mindset and that sort of thing? How much does that factor into success?
It has a huge effect, but not to do. I would say the best book you could ever read on self-help, it's actually scientific, is a book by a British scientist called Richard Wiseman, and the book is called 59 Seconds. And what he did is he actually looked at all these self-help techniques recommended in self-help books and did research, do they actually work or not, okay?
Okay.
And then he has a quiz where he asks you what are usually the top 10 self-help methods prescribed in self-help books, which one do you do? Then you fill out the questionnaire and it shows you the ones you actually do. There's only 5 out of 10 that work. But what I found over the years is that being grateful is actually one of the keys to happiness, but that is actually backed up by scientific literature. In other words, level of income does not predict happiness, but being grateful for what you have is the immense source of power to change the mind. And if you look at the effect of the mind on health, if a woman goes through breast cancer therapy and she gets divorced, okay, she will be 210% more likely not to survive breast cancer therapy. Or if her husband dies, she's 2 times more likely to die of breast cancer. So stress has a huge impact on our physiology. And a really good book that I would recommend for your listeners to read is Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers by Robert Topolsky of Stanford University. And this will explain to you the physiology of stress, but I'm a strong believer in how the mind works. And one of the best books that I always recommend to my students is called The Passion Test. It's written by Janet and Chris Atwood. And I have found when you live your passions and make all your decisions based on your passions, your stress levels go way down and you're a happier person. And their book stresses a lot the value of being grateful and thankful. So, and from reading what you do, you're also a big believer in that. But the mind is critical in producing great physiology. There's actually a very good British study on families eating crap, like terrible nutrition, and people eating a good diet, but alone. There's tons of people that eat together in a happy family, but they still eat crap. They actually have better blood work than people who eat alone with better nutrition. So the point is that, wow, you know, feeling supported, feeling love makes a huge difference in the physiology, you know. And then that's what's important, you know, especially when you have kids, to tell them you love them every day and make sure that they feel loved and take care of that option. You know, to answer your question, the Reader's Digest version, I think it's critical to change your physiology, how you look at the world, and that will change your physiology in the most positive fashion.
Oh my goodness, it's amazing. All these things you're sharing with us, Charles, that I think sometimes that a lot of us wouldn't even think correlate to health or success in terms of physical training and that sort of thing. Charles, what advice would you offer up for people to really get motivated about health? Because I think sometimes maybe people have had health issues their whole life, whether it be with their size or just not really enjoying exercise or that sort of thing, and they really desire, they really want a healthy, happy life. What advice would you offer up to them that maybe there's one or two things that they can do to really get themselves motivated and get excited about making some changes to become more healthy?
Okay, well, there's a very good article on my site. It's been translated, I think, in 20 languages, and it's been spread over the world, and every time we post it again, it has viral qualities. It's called The Myth of Discipline. I actually don't believe in discipline. Okay?
Okay.
I think it's overrated. It's fat and ugly and weak and doing it all in discipline. No. It's not that at all. What it has to do is actually has to do with love. Love is the single most powerful force in the universe. Okay? Like I said, from a strength coach, you know, he looks like him and he had a pretty profound statement. Bear with me. So when people ask me, well, I don't have any motivation, I simply ask them this. What would you prefer, to have washboard abs or to eat donuts? And they'll go, well, I would like to have the abs. Okay, well, why do you choose to eat donuts then? Because what you're telling me is that you prefer to eat donuts and to look great and feel great. So don't tell me you have any discipline, which you love is sweet. So let's take discipline as a shame card for changing behavior. So the day you start loving yourself, exercise will become very easy. And I tell people, you know, Rome wasn't built in one day, so start with something small. And then there's very good research that shows that the people who can influence behavior the most in society, whether you're a training people to recover from alcoholism or to overcome debt or sexual addiction or lack of fitness, make their clients do very small baby steps. Okay? So, for example, woman says, I don't have any discipline. I use what I call least worst choices. I say, okay, from now on, instead of eating donuts, why don't we switch to chocolate covered almonds? And women say, well, is that really better? Yes, it's actually, you know, get some fiber, you get some magnesium. If it's dark chocolate, chocolate, you can have polyphenols that actually regenerate the uterus. So it's the first step. And then, so the woman switches from jelly beans to, let's say, chocolate covered almonds. And that's the first step. Is it a huge step? Yeah, actually it is. You know, because the glycemic index of jelly beans is through the roof, and almonds, because they have good fat in them and they affect the brain positively, will actually help build the right neurotransmitters to actually help with motivation. And then I gradually, when people make small changes, and I'm a strong believer that people should not try to change more than two habits per week.
I think that that's great advice, Charles, because I think that that's what happens is a lot of us, especially at the beginning of the year, we set New Year's resolutions and, oh, I'm going to go to the gym every day and eat these really outstanding goals. And then it's like you miss one time or, you know, don't live up to it. And then all of a sudden it just sort of all goes out the window. So I love what you're suggesting are like these small little tweaks that can really have a huge effect over time. I think that that's great. Charles, we're just having a few more minutes to go here. Is there anything in particular that you'd like people to check out on your website? For those just tuning us, we're here with Charles Poliquin, www.charlespoliquin, charlespoliquin.com. Charles, is there anything in particular you'd like people to visit on your site?
Well, we have many options. I mean, we have articles on training, on nutrition, on supplementation. But everything we do is research-based, so we don't, you know. And we have a full-time researcher, so when we say something, like, for example, the aerobic work done on electronic equipment precipitates diabetes and insulin resistance, we do provide you with the scientific references. I mean, we used to have, in December 2009, 32,000 visitors a month to the website. And as of this morning, it's over 560,000 visitors.
Wow.
And they've come from every country in the world except North Korea, which is a good sign. And we're in 20 different languages, so we do our best to help out everyone around the world. And then this morning I found an Hungarian translator, so now we'll be up to 21 languages. And the thing that I think that people should do is they should take charge. You know, the problem is, there's two problems with the internet. One, there's a lot of information, but two is that there's no filter for it. So people can, everybody's an expert on the internet. And what you find is that there's a strong commercial bias, but, you know, that's why I love websites like EWG.org. They will tell you which moisturizers or suntan lotions and whatever else it does to you. So in this interview today, I gave you quite a few websites that provide free information, not commercially biased. They will help you out better, and I'm a strong believer in that. We have a lifestyle portion to this site, which is growing a lot in popularity. And I mean, I've hired more experts. For example, Janet Bessinger, who's an expert in nutrition, now gives recipes on the website and other quotes. Because, you know, people may want to make the right food choices, but food does not have to be boring. Food can be interesting, and Janet Bessinger provides the recipes. And we have a blogger, Esther Bloom from New York, who's a very good nutritionist, and she makes people laugh and look at themselves about their nutrition choices. So we bring in experts on a regular basis, and we try to spread the word. I mean, our website increased its presence, I mean, at 15-fold in just about 2 years. But I think we don't do SEO tricks. We don't buy Google AdWords. Our internet presence came through just good content. And people will say, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about, backs it up, and it's free, and I like it a lot. So, I mean, we had 2,000 fans on Facebook in December 2009, and we're just going to get to 30,000 this month.
Great.
So the word is spinning out.
Growing, Charles. Charles, we have just probably about one more minute. What words of advice or personal mantra maybe that you live by that you would maybe like to leave with our listeners this evening?
I would say be grateful, you know. That's the most important thing in life. And the more grateful you are, the more life helps you out. And I think that I strongly believe in is give away what you desire. So the more you give away what you desire, the more you get paid in that currency.
Oh, beautiful. I love that. That's fantastic. And that's what a wonderful piece of inspiration that can be used in every area of life. Charles, you just are such a delight, and thank you so much for bringing life-altering information to all of us this evening. My goodness, I know that I certainly feel wiser and am inspired to go and get even more information to make sure that I'm properly educated on exercise and fitness and nutrition. And so thank you for opening our eyes and ears and our minds to new information. We certainly appreciate it.
Good morning, welcome, Susan, and best of luck.
Well, thank you. And thank you, listeners, for joining us here on YOU Unique, Life Starring You.